Excuse me. I'll wait till I
I'll introduce.
No, I'll introduce.
Oh, okay.
See, we're happily married, so, you know, as you can see. Yeah. Just want to thank you for this opportunity. When Peter wanted, he contacted us and asked us to come, we thought, well, yeah, it'd be a good opportunity to come and share with you something of our lives, what we've been through. I know we're limited on time. I believe at 11 o'clock the floor opens up and if we're still speaking, we disappear. So we'll be finished. You know, we could be here all day, but if you want to hear all the real nitty-gritties, but no, we'll finish on time.
Yes.
So you're up next.
I'm next. Okay, Arthur's got to do that bit. That's my mum and dad. I was born in Queensland. Please excuse me. I know your WA is here. I was born in the Darling Downs in a little town called Chinchilla. Look at that. Yes, well, you probably came and did your high senior school in Chinchilla because... Ah, there you go. Miles didn't go past year 10, so if you wanted to do year 11 and 12, you had to come to Chinchilla to do school or go to boarding school. Anyway, so that's where I was born, a little town. My dad worked in the council there, doing all the books and rates and all that sort of stuff. My mum was a home mum, CWA lady, cook, catering, sewing, everything like that. We haven't got photos of them. I had five brothers and sisters. You can see most of them at our wedding, but we don't get together very often to have photos taken. So I grew up there. I finished my high school, and in my year 11, I became a Christian. God called me. The history of that was we were a Presbyterian family who went to communion and went to Sunday school, but that was about it. I went to youth group, but then by the time we got to high school, stopped going to church at all. I won't go into the nitty-gritties, but we stopped going to church. And then God miraculously, you could say in his wisdom, brought a girl to school in year 11 whose parents were missionaries, and all my friends had left school and weren't going on to year 11 and 12, and we piled up. She took me along to youth group at the church, which I lived next door to. And through that, I became a Christian. I believe very firmly it was through the prayers of her parents and her and some other people there. So I became a Christian. And it was probably around about the same time, Chinchilla, you may know, some people won't, that Chinchilla was a Keswick convention town. Every year they had a massive Keswick convention. Missionaries came from everywhere. Well, I had quite an adventurous spirit, and I was looking for what I should do with the rest of my life, and I really wanted to be a horticulturalist and do forestry work. But at this convention that I went out to, God clearly spoke to me very clearly and said that I was going to be a missionary. And, well, that blew me. I was quite prepared to be the missionary. But when I was told that there wasn't much place for female horticulturalists or agriculturalists in missionary work, then that sort of threw me about what I should do. Someone suggested that I should either look at being a teacher or a nurse. The situation was that my brother had gone away teaching and my parents were paying for that. They couldn't afford to send me away teaching too. Nursing, hospital-based, living in the nurse's quarters, paid. So I became a nurse. I became a nurse because God called me to be a missionary. I nursed for 35 years. I did all my training in Toowoomba. I knew where I was going right through my training. It was always focused on missionary service. When I was 18, I'd only ever been to Brisbane once, But I went to Bangladesh for a month to stay with a missionary couple over there. I came back and I thought, okay, God, I'm going to Bangladesh as a missionary. God had other plans. Someone said to me, but if you want to go to Bangladesh, you need to be married. And I thought, no, I don't want to be married just yet. So I forgot about that one for a little while and I thought, okay, God, where else? So when I was finished my nursing training, when I was 21, 1980, 3rd of January, and I went to Papua New Guinea for a month to have a look at work over there with a friend. Didn't feel God calling me so much to Papua New Guinea, and I was a bit sort of, okay, God, where are you going to call me? So I thought, well, I'm going to forget about it for a while. So I did forget about it for a while. I joined a nursing agency and I travelled around inland Queensland doing 3 month stints in hospital. Ended up in Mount Isa. You can see Mount Isa there. It's a bit blurry. But anyway, too bad. Mount Isa is a magnificent town. They say if you can bear 3 weeks, you can stay there for 3 months. If you can bear 3 months, you can live there 3 years. I lived there 3 years in total. In the middle of my time up there, I went away to Toowoomba and did my midwifery training. Couldn't wait to get back to Mount Isa, so I went back. I was there another 18 months, and I went to church one day. I went to the little Baptist, big Baptist church there, and someone sat down beside me and said, "Hey, Debbie, did you see the notices? I typed them and I think there's something for you there." And I thought, oh. So I had a look at the notices, and in the notices was a little call from Australian Baptist Mission Society for nurses to go to Zambia. And I thought, oh, South Africa. That wasn't sort of Bangladesh or New Guinea. It was a bit strange, Africa. So I read it and I just sat with it. I walked out of the church and everyone came up to me, "Debbie, did you..." Not everyone, but quite a number. "Did you see the notices? I think God's calling you." So I couldn't sort of deny that. So I had to investigate it, which I did. Ended up going down to Brisbane for 18 months of the two-year basic theology course in preparation, and I went to Africa. But God does amazing things. I'll tell you again in a minute.
Okay, that's my dad and mum. And I have three brothers and one sister. My father's an ordained Baptist minister. In fact, I was born the night before he was supposed to be ordained. So they actually had to put it off for a few weeks. First few years spent in Geelong and then to Essendon, where my father was minister at Glenbervie Baptist Church, which the facade still exists, but it's a block of units now, and they've combined with Essendon Baptist. At about the age of 1970, my father was called to Perth Baptist here. So my claim to fame here in WA is that my father's name is on a plaque outside Perth Baptist Church because we were there when they had to move. I just cruising through life and went to a camp fairly early in our stay in Perth and gave my life to Christ. I went to year 11 and 12, partway through year 12. I said, I don't want to continue on with school. I want to become a motor mechanic. Now, I think my parents sort of thought I'd follow the family tradition and become an engineer. I guess motor mechanic, engineer, they're similar, but somewhere along the line. But my father said, no, you've got to finish year 12. His threat was, if you don't pass, you go back again. So, boy, that's fairly, fairly reasonable thing to get your pass. So I did. I started training as a motor mechanic here in Perth for 6 months. Then we moved back to Melbourne. I finished my apprenticeship. I got involved with some guys, and we got... were at North Bowen Baptist Church and got involved in motor racing. What else do you do, you know? So I used to spend things like Saturday night hooning around the bush and so forth. And that was great. I was involved in a Christian car club, and we had, in a way, we had a real influence on the car club scene, especially in Victoria, because we were seen as a car club that would stick to our what we believed in. Whenever we had a meeting, ran a sprint meeting or anything like that, we always opened in prayer. Everyone just who would come along just said, gee, you guys, you know, there's something different about you guys. So I guess I thought that is my mission work. And, you know, hey, when you can combine mission work with your favourite activity, why not? Anyway, there I was. I worked in a small workshop. We worked on Mazda rotaries, and I really can't remember, but one Sunday we had someone come to church, and they obviously talked about the need for a motor mechanic in Zambia. I didn't... Yeah, you can see some things. You know, I'm Victoria, she's in Queensland. You can see things coming together here. God works in mysterious ways, sort of thing. And I can distinctly remember at work one after that Sunday, I was there, I was building an engine, and I used to say I could build a rotary engine in my sleep, and my boss would agree that I could do it in my sleep. And just this voice saying, you know, that's you. You know, you've got to go to Africa. So I investigated, I applied. I spent 12 months in Sydney at the Sydney Bible College and or the Baptist College, and headed over to Zambia to a place called Fawali Hill. Now, something interesting happened on the way. I was sat next to this single lady on the plane. Were we interested in each other? No way. No way. Although someone has told us since that, that we were gaga for each other right from the word go, but I wouldn't have said that. But anyway, do you want
to... Okay, so we went to Fawali. They put us on the same plane. We, on the way through, someone said to us, one of the other missionaries, you can change it, in another country, Keith Gallagher, if anybody happens to know him, said, and what about you two? We said, nah. Well, on the mission station, there wasn't many single people. I was in with a couple other nurses. Arthur was the only single guy. So we used to have pity on him and ask him down for meals. And we became good friends. And somehow, after 12 months there, just over 12 months there, we decided we were going to go out together, got engaged on the same day, within sort of 5 minutes of each other. Because our thinking was, I'd gone away to think about it because he'd said something, our thinking was that if we went out together in this place and we broke up, then one of us would have to go home because it was such a closed community. And we thought, we've got to be serious about this and we've got to know that this is what God wants. And, well, that's what happened. And 3 months later, we were married. 12 months later, we had a child. Okay, we'll come to that. This here, up here, is the church at Fawali Hill. We lived right next door. We could wait till they started to sing before we had to go to church because we knew it was starting then. But I worked there as a nurse. I went out to help two other nurses, one who'd been there for 16 years and in somewhere else for 23, and one who'd been out there for 3.5 years before me. And I went out to help them. Within 9 months, both of them had returned to Australia, and I was left with, not left, God help me. I was running a small hospital, we would call it here, without a doctor, and 60 beds, around about 60 patients, inpatients at all times, anything from a cut to malnutrition. We went to Africa in 86, and those who've got any medical knowledge will know that that was where the big AIDS epidemic became known, especially in Africa. We started talking about it within about 6 months of us being there, and very soon after that we were seeing people. We were linking AIDS with the deaths that had been happening in the hospital, unknown causes, for a number of years. We were in one of the main affected areas, the 10 main affected areas in Africa, and it was quite a serious problem for us. So we had a lot of issues. We had staff with AIDS. We had my language helper died with AIDS. We had a lot of things like that going on. But we also had a lot of kwashiorkor, protein deficiency, and lots of babies. So my job was mainly administration. I did everything from go down to the government offices in the capital to try and get wages for the staff, to try and find paper to write our notes on. There was nothing in the country. Medicines were fairly non-existent. Even Panadol was difficult to get. We got a lot of stuff from overseas, so it was quite a challenging time. But I really did love a couple aspects of it. I loved the maternity work. Often my job was to do the difficult deliveries, but it was still lovely to see the babies. And the other one you can see there is weighing the under five children. So we had a big work to do in helping children that were dying from kwashiorkor or malnutrition.
My job obviously was to go and repair cars, repair engines, keep the water supply going, keep the electricity supply going. We ran on generator and a borehole, and things broke down, and it's an old tractor we used to use on an auxiliary pump, because gee, people would complain if they had no power or water.
Especially in the middle of the night.
Someone used to trip the little generator out that we had running overnight. I had a group of guys who worked. It was sort of like jumping in the deep end a fair bit. But God gets you through these things. And it was a really, really great time. Now, while we were there, we were asked to just go and do a few things, like go and preach out at village churches, and that was really good. Fortunately, you used to take a translator. We had a Bible school at the mission station, and you used to take one of the student or number of the students out. I'm sure they used to just come because they'd get a free feed, but that was all right. That's just a bit of a picture of back of some of the workers' houses, and that's us missionaries. That's a typical sort of meal, the big bowl of white stuff, that's inchima, very thick porridge, and then you have bowls of relish, various things, and you, very carefully, because it'll be hot, take a bit of inchima and then a bit of relish and eat it, and use your hands. And there's a real art to doing it. Better show you that one. That's Jono. That must have been just before we left. And then Rebecca came along when we were back in Australia. And would you believe that little baby up the top? That's him on the right-hand side there. He's taller than me and bigger than me. And the beard he's not allowed to chop off, or his grandfather will disinherit him. While we're out there, we went out preaching to village churches, and there was talk of looking at placing someone doing a bit of a backup for these guys who'd done their training and then going back out into the village churches and so do some follow-up work with everything. And we thought that really could be what God was calling us to. So we came back to Australia. I went to Whitley College and did my Bachelor of Theology, and during that time we tested the waters, and to cut a long story short, basically God said no. When we look back, at the time it was pretty disappointing, But when we look back, we'll say, well, you know, God was leading us on a different path. You know, all sorts of things we could say about that. But, yeah, we'll just say that God was, you know, looking back, God was leading us. We then went to, when I finished my Bachelor of Theology, went to Queensland. Debbie's father had died in 95, and we realised that because we'd been living in Melbourne around my family, the kids didn't really know Debbie's family, and Debbie's mum was living in Hervey Bay. So we went up to Hervey Bay and we thought, well, what is it, God, that you want us to do? The suggestion came along, well, why don't you talk to Mission to Queensland, the church planting arm of the Baptist Union of Queensland. So we did. Now, it's 1,700 kilometres from Melbourne to Hervey Bay. God sent us 1,700 kilometres further north to Cooktown for 12 months, where we worked at the Small Baptist Church there. That's it going through some repair stages. That church has been repaired a number of times. Got knocked down in a cyclone in the late 40s. It was originally the Methodist church. And there we worked with Indigenous kids. We worked out in some of the communities. We also got involved with the three other churches that were there, and they have what's called the Discovery Festival, because Cooktown, if you don't know, is where Cook actually beached the Endeavour. I've actually stood on the spot where Cook beached the Endeavour after he struck the reef. And so they have this festival. Now, this festival, Cooktown, was established as the port for mining industry. Its main street is called Charlotte Street. So you can imagine what sort of activity went in Cooktown. The Cooktown Discovery Festival had all these sort of activities that were not family orientated. And so we as churches decided that we would get to and do some family and youth group orientated work. So we had a float in the parade and things like that. And really, I think, talking with people afterwards, non-Christians, they could sort of say, gee, you guys are really doing some good stuff in this town. Because there's a real, Cooktown's one of those places where there can be a real cloud over it, a real, there's witches' covens, you go out into the bush and some of the communities and some of the little communities out, and one guy said he knew where everyone's plot was. Now, this is not a plot for growing normal stuff, it's for growing stuff for, you know, get yourself high. And he said, oh, that guy's plot's over there, because he could sit in his veranda and watch them walk. So, you know, there was all sorts of interesting activities. We were there for 12 months. Now, we then left. Again, there's a big story to it, and we just don't have time to talk about it. But again, God led us on. We did a course, church planting course, on the Sunshine Coast. And out of that, we ended up firstly in Coolgardie, and then we ended up in Kalgoorlie. Now, I don't know whether you want to talk about.
So in Coolgardie, we worked at the Gospel Chapel. It's a little Brethren church there, but they've set up the Christian Aboriginal parent-directed schools, and there's a boarding school for Aboriginal students there. So our role was to, I guess Brethren don't have pastors, but they have like someone who runs the church, and that was our role. And also Arthur was to work in the school during some of the religious education stuff. I went out there and I got, after 12 months, because I broke my arm not long after I got out there, I got a job in the clinic, and I was doing part-time in Coolgardie and then part-time in Kalgoorlie, which is 40 k's away. Our kids were going to school. We were there for 2 years. It was a great time. Once again, working in small church, being able to see God move in different ways, being able to be part of the community. So we felt strongly, and we still feel very strongly, that wherever we are part of the general community, not just the church community. So that was a big part of our focus, was to be involved in things. And Arthur was on the Small Town Economic Committee and the Coolgardie Day Committee. His job there was to pray for good weather, so they said, told us. But it was more than that, really.
Yeah, let me say, in a small town, don't go and ever find out what's happening, because you end up on the committee.
Yeah. I was part of the PNC and the Scouts group, but we were there for 2 years, and our kids were heading towards high school age, and we were supporting ourselves and finding it very difficult. And there were some issues with some of our brethren leaders about my working, because a brethren background. Yeah. So in the end, it became extremely stressful for us, the whole situation. And we prayed about it, and we felt that we had just moved our daughter into school to town, because I'd had to take up more work in town and couldn't look after her after school. So at least if she went to school in town, I could take her to work with me. That was the thinking. We realised then she'd had 6 schools and 11 teachers in 6 years. So we decided that it was time for us to focus our attention on our children. So we left the ministry. We moved into Kalgoorlie. By this time, Arthur was teaching at the little school, Caps School, halfway to Kalgoorlie. And we were able, God blessed us very greatly, with being able to buy a little miner's cottage for less than we could rent a house for. And we renovated that over 9 years. And it was a big renovation job. But we were very blessed, because we had developed some wonderful friends there who, when we had no air conditioning, it was 50 degrees in our kitchen at night, would allow us to pack up our tea, our kids and their homework, and go to their place and eat. So Arthur's going to... I'll very quickly tell you what I did. I nursed. Community nursing, cancer support, education.
I'm going to have to go out of
sync here. Oh, okay. His works first, but I'm telling you mine. Okay, cancer support, education, school health immunisations. I worked for a while in mines health, so I did Oc Health in a mine site for a year. I helped set up a women's work in an Aboriginal organisation called Nududidibini, and that's us down the bottom there teaching childbirth health. And then my last few years there, the photo up the top, I was the regional coordinator for sexual health in the Goldfields. So we travelled around communities, working with youth between 14 and 25 and doing sexual health education with them. I loved my job. I am passionate about helping people learn how to look after themselves.
I did a variety of jobs. Let me just go back. And as Debbie said, I was teaching in a small Aboriginal school in just out of Kalgoorlie. That went for a couple of years. Then I started working at the Goldfields Baptist College, doing some teaching as well. I then moved into working with apprentices and trainees, which I felt really good, because it meant that I was helping train young people into their vocation. It also meant that I was using my training as well in trades. And my last position there was doing sales with a company called MTU Detroit Diesel, which is now Penske Power Systems, doing things like selling engines, selling filters, working with mining companies, drilling companies, all sorts of stuff to get drill rigs up and running and all sorts of stuff. And that was really good, because both our jobs actually meant we travelled way up north, way out east, way down south, all over the place. And that was really exciting. But for me, I know that I was feeling a little bit unfulfilled in the end. And when our son in 2010, our daughter had moved down to Perth, he went to uni as a mature age student. He'd worked for 5 years. We thought, that's the end. There's nothing in Kalgoorlie that's really for us. And I was feeling, I know myself, I was feeling quite unfulfilled about what we do. So we moved back down to Perth and thought, we've never had long service leave, so we hooked up the caravan, went off for 3 months. We've never worked anywhere long enough to get long service leave, so we had our own. Got back to Perth and thought, well, what are we doing? We applied for jobs that we should have got, breezed in to get, didn't get anything. And then God called us back to Malawi. So we headed back to Malawi. And first thing we did in Malawi was to do language learning. We were there till the day we retired, 17 years, was where we're supposed to be. That's where we're supposed to be now. There's just some pictures of Malawi. Bike transport's one of the main things over there. Village, some kids. Oh, entertainment, walking a cheetah in South Africa. That was fantastic. I love that. I'm a cat person. Going to national parks and things like that, and seeing animals. I think I'll let Debbie tell you what happened, because it gets a bit hard for me.
I can get a bit emotional. Not that I will. Okay, so we loved Malawi. We felt really at home. We spent 5 months up in the mountains minding a language work for one of the missionaries. Then we went back down to the town of Mangochi, which was extremely humid. However, Arthur started to get infections. And firstly, it was boils for us. Even I got boils under my arm. You can imagine how painful that is to have big carbuncles under there. And then he got kidney stones. And he had to get flown down to South Africa to get the kidney stones checked out. And at the same time, they decided that he had a little hernia that he needed to have repaired before we went back. So he had that done. We went back to Malawi, and he got sick again. He got every infection that came around. So in the end, it was recommended we were due some holiday, that we take a bit extra time and go south and have a good rest. We did that. We got back to Malawi. In between time, we're learning language and going out to making relationships with people so that we can tell them about Jesus. And we were back from that 3 months. On the way back, we almost got hijacked in... We were very... God bless... God is very good. Rascals had set burning tires across the road to hijack somebody, and there was a truck parked there. We thought it was on fire, so we went round it, but we hit the tires. Fortunately, there were two cars coming the other way, and the rascals, they saw taking off. Otherwise, we would not be maybe here today. But anyway, God was very grateful to us, but that was a little... thing that sort of ended our 3 months of relaxation. We went back to Malawi. We had a language course the first week we were there, a grammar session that we were doing with as a group of people. At the end of that, Arthur said to me, "I've got a headache." And he said, "It's really bad." And that got worse and worse. And I'm giving him all the painkillers, and I had some good ones that I could, and nothing was taking it away. So we ended up, it was here, and his face started to swell. We ended up going to Blantyre, one of the bigger centres, to see a doctor. And he decided Arthur had a blocked sinus, because it was blocked. And they wanted to drain it. We were with a health company that said we couldn't have any procedures done in the country because of health, sanitation reasons. So spent 5 days, long story, but it was a lot of mix-up, and took us 5 days to be sent down to South Africa. By that stage, his nose bridge was under his eyeballs. It was just blowing up his whole face. We got to South Africa. The ENT specialist, South Africa has amazing medicine. ENT specialist looked at his nose and said, "You've got an abscess in your septum." So the septum of his nose, by that stage, the abscess had caused a blood supply to cut off, and the tissue had necrosed, so he had to have it all removed. So it was a big operation, very extremely painful. And for Arthur, it took a lot of getting over. He was just getting over it, and he got another kidney stone were still in South Africa, but that one fortunately didn't have to have removed. And we went back to Malawi. We were feeling that God, Arthur was really struggling still. I was just pleased to be home. I loved being there. But then we had a message from our son. Now, when our son rings me in tears, I know something is wrong. He does not. He's a tough boy. He had injured his back at work, and he was working part casually. And at the same time, our daughter had a car accident, and he was trying to cope with both because she struggles with depression. He was helping look after her. And we decided we had to come back to Australia to get our kids settled, for Arthur to recover. And when we came back to Australia, we needed to get a medical to go back overseas, and we've not been able to do it. So God called us to Africa. Now he's brought us home. What do we do? We don't know. So we're at Foz Bible College asking God, what next? We love the study. Arthur's doing his master's. I'm doing an associate degree. We are passionate still about cross-cultural work. We are passionate about teaching people the Bible and teaching people to discover the Bible for themselves. So at the moment, that's our position. I think Arthur's just got... Did you want to read a verse? Okay, I'm going to leave you with something. I've just done a course down in Melbourne. I'm not technical. I've just done a on culture and language, and I had to read a book with her. And this is something that was at the end of the book, and it's talking about the mystery of God's leading. Okay, when all else fails and you don't know where you are, you don't know what God's doing, you're saying, God, where are you? What do you want me to do? These are some things that we can hang on to. God has promised never to leave me. Therefore, God is near, even though fog hides his presence and I fear he may have abandoned me. God keeps his promises. In spite of my circumstances and past acts, he does not, will not, and cannot change his mind about walking with me during the mystery times. God works his good purposes not only for me, but for all he loves. In life's mysteries, he is actively working out his good pleasure for me and for others, even though I may never realize it. Even if the fog of mystery never lifts in my life, God is worthy of my worship and obedience. He may choose not to explain himself, and I must rest in his wise judgment. Deuteronomy 29:29 states, "The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law." My responsibility is to walk humbly and faithfully before my just and loving God and within my community. And I guess that sums up where we are right at this present time.